Well, one of the many great frustrations I think most of us share is our government does struggle to make some fairly obvious reforms, in reforms that would accelerate economic recovery. It would do the work that government constantly talks about, as it finds itself stuck in what I see as an ideological cul-de-sac. And I've noted it often, and I'm sorry if you're sick of the quote, but it is a very good quote to haul out at times like this. And it's from the former UK ambassador to South Africa, Lord Robin Rennick, who says the ANC is addicted to state-run everything. And we've seen it in almost every aspect of the state-owned enterprise sector, where there's been massive failure, and only at the last minute has government opened up the doors to allow the private sector to come in. I wonder how complicated it would be to get South Africa's not especially complicated rail network functioning properly again. I suspect it's not that complicated. Somebody who knows a lot more about this than I is James Holly. James is the chief executive of a company called Traxion, T-R-A-X-T-I-O-N. It's a company which operates trains in 7 countries in other African economies, in economies where I'm guessing, James, it's much easier to get on the rails than it's proving to be in South Africa.
Evening, Bruce. Yes, well, you know, the rail reform journey outside of South Africa is also pretty recent. You know, if you go back about 6 years ago, we could only operate our trains in Mozambique. And today, you can operate our trains in almost all of our regional trading partners, and increasingly in other parts of Africa as well, including West Africa and even Egypt now. So, you know, the idea of rail reform is something that has really taken root regionally, and South Africa is following, but it's coming pretty fast, it must be said, even in South Africa.
We'll talk about South Africa in just a moment. I wonder just what has been the catalyst for this broad acceptance across most of our neighbours to allow independent operators like yourselves to use the rails of a state-owned entity, because the stuff is, I suppose, quite complicated logistically, but it's probably more complicated ideologically.
So, Bruce, effectively what's happened is that in the past, railways were dominated by monopolies. They were either state-owned, and I'm talking regionally and in South Africa.
Yeah.
They were either dominated by state-owned monopolies or private sector monopolies operating under a concession. And that was really under a World Bank-sponsored process that was initiated about 10 to 15 years ago. And pretty much all of those monopolies have really struggled. And the move now is to what we call open access, where the state retains control over the infrastructure, and then the state can continue to operate its trains, and the state railways generally do in the areas where we operate outside of South Africa. But the private sector is invited to take up the latent slots on the network. So, you know, if we use the Durban-Johannesburg line, for example, there are about 75 slots in each direction each day for trains to utilize. Transnet uses about 15 of those. Those latent slots create a huge revenue-generating opportunity for those governments to earn access fees, or is what we call them in the railways. But you would know them when you operate on the N3 as poll fees. And so we pay toll fees to utilize the latent capacity in the network, which is a huge revenue generating opportunity for the net for the regional railway industry, of course.
And we know the problems with our rail network. We've discussed them often and extensively. We know there's a new management team at Transnet, which seems to be far more open-minded about what its role is in ensuring the sustainability of Transnet. But opening up the rail network is not up to Transnet. It's a political issue. And I suppose in the same way as the state has tried to sell off SAA and then took 3 years to then basically bail on the agreement that had happened during COVID, the state struggles to make announcements when it is so wedded to state-owned ownership of assets that are supposed to work and supposed to work in everybody's interests but are failing. Where are we in the process as you see it? Somebody who's watched this rapid evolution of change in the semi-privatization, or at least the access to state-run rail networks by private operators.
So, Bruce, it really kicked into gear in March 2022 when Cabinet approved the National Rail Policy. It was the first policy in sort of living memory, rail policy for South Africa in sort of living memory, and really set out sweeping reforms for the way that railways should be operated in South Africa. It included the vertical separation of Transnet into three parts: infrastructure owner, infrastructure manager, and train operating companies. It set out the introduction of competition on every single railway line in South Africa, whether that's commuter rail, branch line, bulk line, core line, across the whole of the country. It set out the devolution of PRASA into the respective metros, for example. So really sweeping changes that were approved in March 2022. But I think what's really encouraging is that since then, Cabinet has also approved the Economic Regulation of Transport Bill, which sets out the regulation to enact, amongst other things, rail policy. The Freight Logistics Roadmap and the Private Sector Participation Framework for Rail were approved by Cabinet in December last year. Both of those set out the pathway to the implementation of the reform. The National Logistics Crisis Committee has been set up. Operation Bulandlela have been set up, both of them targeting the implementation of the self-same rail reforms. And even the terms and conditions of the National Treasury Guarantee to Transnet also stipulate that the reforms need to be implemented by Transnet within a set timeline. So we have seen since March 2022, in 24 months, massive progress by government, I think driven by Bulandlela, to see the implementation of this reform. What we need to see next is two big and very important elements of the implementation of a reform. The first is the finalization of the network statement, which will set out the terms and conditions and the basis in which the private sector can start to operate trains across the length and breadth of this really massive rail network we have in South Africa. 85% of Africa's rail track sits in South Africa. On the one hand, and then on the other hand, the establishment of the private sector participation unit in the Department of Transport, which is going to oversee really important projects like the concessioning of rail infrastructure to upgrade and improve the condition of the infrastructure. Because for large sectors of our freight body, we need to see huge efficiencies in order to be able to invest into trains. So those two elements are what is bearing down on us and are going to be very important to see the successful rollout of this reform. But really, the platform has been laid.
The platform, you need a platform and you need the rails. And of course, if you don't use the stuff, it deteriorates and ultimately you lose it. And we've seen theft of infrastructure and all of that sort of stuff. Your best guess where we are in terms of a time frame, because of course, for people like yourself, you're going to have locomotives on order. You're going to need the stuff to put onto the rails. You need to know some sort of, have some sort of idea as to when it's all going to play out.
Bruce, so, we've got a fleet of about 65 locomotives, for example, and every single one of them is deployed into our regional trading partner. So as we stand today, aside from bringing a pilot train into South Africa, we've got nothing to offer at the moment, okay? And as far as I know, the other private sector participants are in pretty much the same position. Okay, so for rail reform, really, and it has always been about this for South Africa, the scale of South Africa is just so much bigger than and the freight body in South Africa is so much bigger. So it's always been about the investment into new trains, okay, which is brilliant for the South Africa, because most of those will be assembled here. It's really good for the South African rail industry. But the challenge is that on a best case scenario, you're looking about 24 months from the time you pay a deposit for a train. Until it leaves that workshop and that assembly plant. And that's from the time you can pay a deposit, and that's from the time you can raise about 250 million rand for just one 50 wagon flatbed container train. So you're looking at a really massive investment of money that needs to be raised, and then a reasonably long lead time before those trains can enter into operation. So before this private sector-led reform really starts to take foot and makes a difference into South Africa, you're looking at least 2026, and that's on the train side. If you look at the PSP framework and the Freight Logistics Roadmap, it talks about the adoption of concessions over sections of rail track to upgrade the condition of those. Those are also complicated projects. If you look at the concessioning of DCT2 to ICTSI, you know, those are projects that also take 12 to 18 months to get those projects away before the investments start. But, you know, in our game, when we buy assets that have a life of 30 years. On the spec sheet, it says life of asset 30 years. So we
James,
need to take
I
long.
want to talk to you. I want to talk to you more. I really do, because I think there's lots more to learn about this. And I'm going to ask my producers to invite you back, because we're just out of time, unfortunately. Chief Executive Attraction, James Holly, explaining South Africa's rail network and its potential like no one I've ever heard before. Producers, get him.